Now, we do meet as businesses are preparing for the first time for a carbon price. And so right across Australia, businesses that use low carbon technologies will, for the first time, be rewarded as their offering becomes relatively less expensive than the offering of their competitors. And as we transition to the full trading scheme in 2015, there'll be a cap on emissions. There'll be a firm limit on the amount of carbon that can be released each year from the covered sectors, and that limit will decline over time. Now, the Treasury tell us that by 2050, under this scheme, $100 billion will have been invested in renewable energy, 40% of Australia's energy will come from renewables, and the renewable sector will have grown to 17 times its current size. The framework's also designed to protect ordinary households, cutting taxes, increasing pensions. So the tax-free threshold will triple. Nobody will pay any tax on the first $18,000 that they earn. Pensioners, part pensioners, self-funded retirees will receive some combination of tax breaks and payments, and so will allowance recipients. And family tax benefits will also be increased. Now, I raise those latter components because these things reflect a core principle of environmental justice, that environment protection should never come at the expense of the vulnerable. But as we approach this point, the people in this room should feel incredibly proud. Changes at this scale are actually never dreamed up by the legislature in isolation. The introduction of a carbon price in Australia has been incredibly hard fought. It has taken a very long time to build the case for urgent action on climate change. And so the scientists, the community activists, the party activists, the faith leaders, the unions, the academics, and all the citizens who built the platform for that change, you all deserve full credit for your actions. I'm really proud to be on the platform for this forum, essentially because you are a very important audience and a very important part of Australia's climate change story. But the bad news is that I don't really think it's time for the activists to hang up their boots. I think there is a little bit more marching that we're going to have to do. And I want to make the argument tonight, and I'm interested that actually John Kay started us off thinking about this same problem, that the single greatest challenge beyond the introduction of the carbon price is, for us, political. I want to talk about learning about our mistakes over the last few years so that we can plan to overcome that challenge. But I also want to put a hopeful case, at least in part because I think the key to winning is refusing to bow to the relentless campaign of negativity which always accompanies progressive change. Now, in focusing on this, I don't want to diminish the substantial policy challenges that also remain, the adaptation challenges, the technology challenges, the challenges around international negotiations. But we now face a serious and credible threat to roll back the entire architecture of carbon reduction. The Leader of the Opposition has clearly stated that he intends to fight the next election on that basis. His promise to the Australian people will be that he will remove the carbon price and he will dismantle the $10 billion Clean Energy Finance Corporation. It's unclear what his position will be on renewable energy and the renewable energy target, but if the behaviour of the East Coast newly elected Liberal National Party premiers is any guide, it won't be pretty. Now, to be honest, if it was only Mr. Abbott, I would not be so worried. What does worry me is that Mr. Abbott stands on the shoulders of a very powerful crowd. There is a substantial and well-organised group of people that support his view. And there is a battle for the hearts and minds taking place. It's being played out in the politics of the suburbs, it's being played out in the politics of workplaces, it's being played out on talkback radio, it's being played out in the pages of newspapers, and it's being played out on the blogosphere. Now, unlike some, I don't think this crowd is illegitimate. They've got a different view to me, it's a democracy, they are free to make the case. But it doesn't mean that we should accept their analysis, and it doesn't mean we should accept their vision for Australia. And we need to be pretty clear that this is a substantial political battle. It is occurring on the ground, not in the parliament, and it requires a substantial political response. I want to spend a minute reflecting on why this issue has captured the imagination of both conservatives and progressives, because I think it tells us a little bit about what's at stake and how this battle's shaping up. Whether we like it or not, climate change has become symbolic of a choice about Australia's future. Seriously tackling climate change does mean accepting that we live in a society and in a democracy. We have the power, and I would argue the obligation, to shape and change the economy to meet the needs of our community. Dealing with climate change also means accepting our responsibility in the community of nations, and that includes our responsibility to participate and to lead. So climate change may be a relatively new idea, but I would argue that the broader political questions that it raises speak to some very old battles. And it brings me back to one of my earlier themes. When you look back at battles past, real progress and real reform is rarely achieved without an alignment between the community movement and parliamentary parties. It is one of the reasons that I've argued very hard from within the Labor Party that we need to continue to imagine ourselves as both a party and a movement. It's also why I believe that a person like me needs to be here and why Jed needs to be here, because we need to build and develop the relationship between the Labor movement and the environment movement. Now, I don't imagine that there was anyone in this room who was naive enough to believe that back in the day that we sort of passed the legislation to introduce a carbon price, that the battle would end. But equally, I don't think that in 2007, when we signed the Kyoto Protocol, anyone in this room imagined that it would be this hard. In fact, I think as a movement, we took our eye off the ball. We assumed that we'd given our parliamentary people a mandate and they'd go off and implement our vision. But unfortunately, that's never how it works, and that's not the lesson of history. The history of progressive change is one of reform and then pushback and then counter-push and more reform. So whether we like it or not, we need to gear up for a battle. And it is a battle about a choice between a comprehensive architecture to reduce carbon or a phony direct action scheme that is unfunded and without scientific or economic credibility. And I want to say tonight that we are not going to win that battle by talking to ourselves. We're also not going to win it by lobbying parliamentarians. They're currently busy listening to their constituencies, and their constituencies are listening to our opponents. We will win by prosecuting our case in workplaces, in communities, in the blogosphere, and on the radio, just like our opponents do. And we will win by maintaining our focus on the real challenge, which is to win the hearts and minds of working Australia by reasserting the significance of climate change, by championing the carbon pricing scheme, and by creating a positive and inclusive vision of our transition to a low-carbon future.